Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Welcome, everyone, to City Alpha 3, the Nerd Party's Star Trek podcast. I'm Philip Gilfus, joined as always with my co-hosts Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. And we are here to talk, as always, Star Trek Picard, at least for a couple more weeks. I mean, well, we'll talk about it, of course, but as far as new episodes, so we're coming to the tail end of the season one with the episode Broken Pieces, episode 8, if my math is correct. And so before we get too much into it, doing any Star Trek stuff non-Picard related, Darren or Daniel, in the past couple weeks?
Actually, I picked up another audiobook. I'm still working my way through the Picard one, but I've been wanting to listen to this other one. It's the Antares Maelstrom. So it's a new one based in like the TOS time. So, you know, just I like a lot of these audiobooks and their reading on Audible. So I felt like I wanted to kind of bounce between this one and the Picard one. Not that the Picard one wasn't good. It's just it hasn't hooked me, so I'm not really binging it as much as I thought I would. So, but this.
Well, I think it's good they have another book because, you know, the 23rd century is just so unexplored by, I think, Star Trek.
Yeah, I think this is supposedly during like the rest of the 5-year mission. You know, it's all the main players, you know, and they're just off on another adventure, and it's just a book instead of a show. So, yeah, it's enjoyable. Just cracking into it, but.
What about you, Daniel? Any other Trek stuff? I actually tried to fire up Star Trek Online, but as always, you know, same thing every time. I don't play it for 2 months, so then like half the time is spent patching and uploading, and then by the time I'm ready to go, I'm like, I'm bored.
I haven't played in a bit, but I'm pretty sure I saw recently. Oh yeah, they have seven. Is now being promoted with the show, so they're keeping up with the new stuff. I mean, Michael Burnham is still she's there when you load up into the game, and now it's going to be Seven. We'll be there as well. And hey, maybe something interesting happened to Seven this episode we could talk about. So they're keeping up there. I haven't played in a little bit, but I got to get back on that at some point.
Now, I did watch, because I'm still trying to do my TOS rewatch. I did watch Balance of Terror.
Romulans!
Yes, the first Romulan. Very, very apropos.
Nice.
For Star Trek Picard. So, I think, you know, and I've obviously seen it several times. But I'm actually going to talk about the non-Romulan part. But, I mean, because, again, you know, for folks who maybe don't watch a lot of TOS, and I'm sure most listeners do, but the framing of that episode is a wedding. You know, there's a wedding at the beginning, and it gets disrupted by Red Alert and all this stuff, and at the end, spoiler alert, the groom dies during the attack. And so you have that ending, which is very somber, of course. But, I mean, you know, it's just more than just sort of your standard TOS story. They're actually, like, you know, we're going to throw in some characters, you know, some themes, some all that stuff. So, you know, as much as I always criticize melodrama in this new series of Trek, you know, they obviously did it in other Treks as well and worked. So, well, let's get into Broken Pieces and maybe we can put them together. I think there were sort of three big stories, and you can agree or disagree, but I'm just going to tack them one at a time. So my sort of big ones are lots of talks,
yeah,
which is basically the crew, the main crew we're going to talk about. The Romulan secret, that's for my other one we'll get into, kind of getting finally a lot of backstory, and as much as it is. And then the Seven and the Borg, you know, talking about that. So let's just talk about our on the ship with the La Serena. And, you know, at first blush, I thought, like, this is kind of stupid. But I'm like, you know what? I'm enjoying it, so I don't care. The gang of holograms.
Funny.
Darren, which one's your favorite
see,
hologram?
I have that picture that's been floating around social media where it's, like, all of them. So you have Enoch, the emergency navigational hologram, Emmett, the emergency tactical hologram, Ian, the emergency engineering hologram, Mr. Hospitality, the emergency hospitality hologram, and Emil, the emergency medical hologram. You know,
Now, if they combine into one, I think
form feet sort of and legs, form arms and torso.
Where's the BuzzFeed quiz, people? Which Rios hologram are you? So
I also want to point out that early on, in I think episode 3 or whatever, when he was first introduced, we talked about this. We're like, we want to see an episode with
eight
of these.
We got it. I'd say Ian, the emergency engineering hologram with the Scottish accent for no reason. It's so over the top, and he's like, he doesn't even speak words. So I'd say that's my vote. I know we've had him the least so far, but I liked Ian.
What about you, Daniel? Which is your favorite Rios hologram?
You know, I don't know if I have a favorite. I'm sure I will eventually.
You can't say Rios, because I just, you know.
I'm not sure.
I have to say, my favorite is Enoch, because he dresses so smartly. Like, I don't know how you would think a navigational hologram would dress, but it just has, like, he's so put together, and he has the English accent, because I love all the accent work. So, like, if I'm correct, and listeners can send in angry if I'm wrong, but you have Enoch, who has I'm probably getting it wrong. I think Enoch is the Irish accent. Emil is the English accent. Ian is the Scottish accent. Emmett is sort of like the Slavic, whatever. And Mr. Hospitality, I love it. It's actually, to my ear, a British person doing an American accent. Like, because Rios is obviously doing an American accent, but, like, Mr. Hospitality is, like, someone trying to do an American accent.
Yeah, I thought...
It's all very, like, this and flat and this, you know, so... But I love it. So, but anyway, well, you know, so we have...
Raffi.
Raffi sort of doing this detective work about what's up with the Rios backstory. And she gets little bits and pieces from everyone, then gangs them all together in the chalet ready room, and then tries to suss it out before going to see Rio. So what did you all sort of think of Darren Raffi doing the investigation and then getting them all
in one
room?
It's right up her alley. I mean, she loves conspiracy, weird things like that. And I liked how it was interesting how we're learning through them, but it's clear that when they were originally created, it's like they were created off of templates, but then Rios went in and deleted specific pieces of his past, which kind of is why they're all kind of wonky, because they're missing part of their template, as it were. Like, they can get the job done, but they're not Rios, you know, they're like a fraction of it. But no, it was a lot of fun, and I think this is a great bit of having fun with Star Trek. Like, it doesn't have to all be, you know, end times and gloom. Like, I think this adds a lot of, like, I could see this happening on any of the shows, you know, or at least the shows with, you know, holographic technology like that. But, you know, we get a little bit of that with, like, the ECH in Voyager, but this is that, you know, times another factor.
Now, Daniel, I actually got a lot of gaming vibe throughout this whole episode, but just for this part, what game are you thinking of where you meet a hologram and then it's like, anything I can do for you? Like, oh, what, you're a navigational hologram, and then you look at the dialogue options, and then there's the red button, and you can be like, oh, do you know
how to... Are you saying they're teaching her how to play the game, is what you're saying?
Yeah, there's like an 8-star thing. Oh, okay, and then you go to the engineering hologram. Oh, there's a blue dialogue box. How do you how would you engineer these stars together? What kind of game are we talking about?
That's true. She knows that they have a little exclamation over their head, and she knows they have a quest for her.
Here's the thing, and this is maybe more my thing than anyone else. I don't like that they keep rewarding Raffi for her crazy.
But she's right.
But that's what I'm saying. She shouldn't be right. Do you remember the episode with Seven where she went all crazy conspiracy theory?
Oh, yes.
The
Voyager conspiracy.
Yeah.
I think they need to stop rewarding Raffi for having her. It works here in this episode, but that was what was sticking in my ear the whole time I was watching. I did like it, though. I mean, and of course, it's all in service to learn more about Rios.
True.
And his backstory, which we get.
It kind of felt like an old TNG-ish episode, like actually spending a lot of time with one character and learning a lot about them.
And I do like, I mean, from a writing standpoint, I like how it's about to get to Rios, but then that's how it's all about his reaction to seeing Soji, which is then also about the Romulan grief planet, which we'll talk about. So it all is coming together. You know,
we actually got a lot of answers in this episode, which was nice.
Mm-hmm. And now, sort of skipping along to at least just that one storyline here. So we get the gang of holograms, and then finally we get based on Rios' reaction to seeing Soji, we get Rafi talking to Rios
after he opens up his blocker.
That's true.
Filled with pips. So many pips.
Filled with pips.
And at least his replicate. Like, actually, at first I thought she was replicating alcohol.
Right, that's what I thought too.
You know, allowed to. But I think it was coffee because he was,
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I thought she was like, how he got kicked. Let me take a shot, and then
is that how he got kicked out of Starfleet? He just had a handful of pips. He just turns his hand over and just drops them all on the table.
Yeah, what did you think, Darren, about his bag?
Yeah, I know there were a lot. I mean, we were all screen capping that shot of the outside of the Sovereign-esque type ship, and it's a very tragic story, though. Like, what's unveiled about the captain and you guys will know, but like a very big BSG vibe, this whole episode kind of had that. But no, I liked it, and it felt like, again, I like these moments, and they've had a few of them actually, where you can tell like that Rafi and Rios have a history, and they're friends, and they support each other, and I like that. Like it, I felt sometimes it got a little drowned out because there's so much else we have to learn in this show. But when we get these moments, they're nice, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I mean, this storyline, but basically all the storyline, there's this kind of tragic and darkness, and bleakness. But I have to say this episode had all that, which I don't like, me personally. But the way this episode did it, I was like, I'm going with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it. I mean, because I think this is actually a really good episode.
I mean, he wasn't trying to kill himself. It wasn't, like, over the top. Like, it was just, this is the crappy part of my life that happened.
Yeah, and I guess my underlying problem, but it's my problem, not everyone else's, and Daniel, where I usually go with this, is that the fact that the captain was being threatened by whoever, Admiral, Section 31, whoever, that his ship was going to get blown up, which always seems like a very vague threat. Like, how are you going to do
that? We're the only ones out here.
How do I know you're going to... But anyway, so it's like, kill the sensor, we'll magically blow up your ship. I'm like, okay. But what did you sort of think of the backstory, Daniel? Did it make sense of why Rios is so existential?
Yeah, I'm with you, Philip, that it bothered me. It felt so contrived that not only did they find out how quickly, I guess it's Commander O that orchestrated all of this, and
Commodore
O. Oh, I keep saying Commodore.
Oh man, jeez.
And I don't know. I guess she has a kill switch on all the ships. Maybe how is she so powerful? I don't. Whatever. And
it sounds just very Discovery-ish, but
it does. And then he has to murder these people in cold blood, or I guess cold oil, or whatever you want to call it. And then kill himself. And that's like really depressing. And like,
it doesn't shoot us, do we not leak?
Yeah. So that part was a little. I didn't love it. But the Rios stuff is good. I really like Rios as a character, and I think I love the actor who plays him, and he's really interesting. And I'm glad that it got out there. But a lot like in last episode with the whole. Oh my goodness, I can't think of what was his name? Thad. With the whole Thad thing.
Troy Riker.
It felt way too connected really conveniently. And I'm like,
captains in all the world and all the ships, this is the one that had the relationship with a previous synth.
With an android.
Yeah. You're not wrong, but I mean, that's just.
So here's the thing.
Television. It just what happens.
I know, whatever, fine, whatever. I'm not letting it bother me that much.
Yeah.
But my question is. Yes. And this is speculation for next episode. There's a boy Romulan, boy synth, and a girl synth. And we know the whole planet is filled with girl synths of Soji.
Right.
That means there is the male synth. Is it going to be a Brent Spiner synth? Is it going to be a somebody new synth?
Bruce Maddox,
Maddox synth? Who is going to play the male synth? that's all the planet. The whole planet.
And that kind of brings up what I was just thinking. It was kind of strange that we were told and not shown by flashback this scene where they get shot. I was almost, because, you know, not anything, not even a mid-roll flashback or anything. The only flashback we got was the, you know, hula hoop dance. We'll get to that later. But
Yeah.
And we had somebody, we not only did we not get shown, but we actually had a ship's cartoonist.
Sketch artist?
Yeah.
Sketch artist, you know, who happened to be nearby.
The ship is very secretive, you know, just
if
like
only
the
they had the
court,
technology to take pictures in the 25th century.
Well, you see, his holographic communication system was out, and so the only backup is Sketch. So,
I mean, I know, to be fair to the writing of the episode, they do specifically say that Rios cleaned it up. He wiped all
that's
the
true.
Records.
Yeah.
He kept
that. But
that
doesn't stop us from
deleted logs.
Seeing
it
as a... Yeah.
And he just reported that...
His captain went crazy,
But I like picking up that they had... You know, so he has a drawing of... You know, whatever her name was, the Soji, like, android. But they don't have
flowers?
A drawing.
Was that his name?
Jana. Jana is the name.
That was the ambassador. But I was going to say the male had that weird name.
Okay. Yeah, I don't remember.
It was. And so, like, we don't have a sketch of who this ambassador or whatever.
Right. And it's like, oh, if you only you'd turned your sketch a little to the left, and then we would have known.
Yeah. But it's older. I mean, I only saw the episode once. It did say because I can't remember that it was a gendered, whether it's male or female, but
it was
older. And then you had the younger. Yeah.
Yeah, the two beings that were beamed aboard, the ambassador, quote unquote, beautiful flower, and mm-hmm. Jana. That's who it was.
So, yeah, beautiful flower. All right. And now I'm curious, because there's obviously a lot of ways you can go, and there's only two episodes, so we'll find out, presumably. Maybe not. But who the other one was. And I know we haven't gotten to the other part yet, but with this whole thousand... How many years ago are we talking about? 100,000, 10,000, whatever. The way back past, way back machine of when the Sens destroyed the world. There's so much TOS, ancient androids, you can play with if you wanted to. You can make your own stuff, I'm just saying. You don't have to tie everything to what came before. But, like, Darren, I know you read that one book where it had all about androids, that one novel.
Oh, yeah, The Light Fantastic. Yeah.
So I know they probably talked. Like, I haven't read it, but I remember hearing that talked a lot about the TOS androids and all that stuff too. So I'm wondering how much they're going to play all that together. But
yeah, this is the interesting thing as they start to reveal about this culture of androids, because I got the feeling that there's one or two things that could have happened. Either Bruce Maddox went to this homeworld, which isn't the Conclave of Eight, but it's some other homeworld, and started creating androids. Or there were already other androids, and that developed. I'm starting to doubt if Soji and all her sisters were actually made by Maddox, or if they were came from something else.
Man, if they weren't made by Maddox, then he's completely useless and has not done anything.
Except die. Well, I guess it didn't confuse me. I mean, it confused me in a good way. That once they threw out the timeline that, I keep reading her name, that the synth that Rios liked was introduced. And, I mean, what's the timeline we're talking about? We can make it up. 10 years ago, maybe? 5 years ago? Whatever it was. When he had this incident. You know, so, but we know that Soji and her sister, gosh, I'm forgetting everyone's names, were introduced, what was it, 9 months ago? How old is she?
3 years.
Three years. I thought it was shorter than that. But anyway, okay, so 3 years. And so they're new. I mean, you know, they're previous models of this synth line. So, I mean, it's interesting. So, like, were they just part of the production that he was making? Because I just thought there were two. Now there's three, but if there's three, there has to be four. Because, right, they come in twos. You know, they're like hot dog buns and hot dogs.
I feel like,
and
I feel like that whole planet is going to be filled with them.
Yeah.
Because there's buildings and settlements and stuff. I feel like there's going to be more than just...
That's true. Actually, I retract my previous statement about Maddox not making them, because that that would go against her dream.
Finding a home world.
Well, yeah, and it's obviously Maddox, or pretty much Maddox, who is doing that. But, well, yeah, and like you said, there's a fourth sister, at least. So you have Soji, Dodge, and Janna, we know of so far. And Sister X. But
and it could be, and we you know, we'd speculate here all day, but it could be like an older race of synth. Could be the Ambassador, Beautiful Flower, whatever. And then you have the Maddoxudian, whatever. The Maddox made synths. Yeah. So you almost have two generations of synths. We'll find out.
If we have like a whole race of like five or six human actors, this is going to be so close to Battlestar at that point. It's going to be insane.
Yeah, didn't you see the note at the end of this episode that said that there are two models? You didn't see
well,
that?
Well, and it'd be interesting if they pulled, what is it? If they pulled deep into like TOS, because the other androids seen are like, you know, the giant forehead, crazy looking, you know, like they look perfectly human, but they it's just act weird.
Yeah, I was just trying. I watched that episode a couple episodes ago to my TOS rewatch. I can't remember the name. Is it What Little Girls Are Made Of? I can't remember. But the one with Dr. Corby and Nurse Chapel and Rock. I don't even know the big guy, android. Anyway, doesn't matter. And then just to continue on the ship for a second, this isn't necessarily, but it kind of leads to this to the table scene. But before we get to the table scene, we have, and I have this with a question mark at the end, the redemption question mark of Agnes.
Really nervous. Daniel, I was really nervous about this because I'm like, oh God, you don't get to just be okay and everybody just has hunky dory about this at the end. And finally, like they reaffirmed at the end, they're like, okay, we're still gonna bring you when we get to the starbase. You're still gonna go to jail because that's where you belong.
Deep Space 12.
Fortunately, we're not going
like,
there.
Deep Space. And we're all like, and like 12. Ah, you bastards.
I am, you know, the thing is, like, her character, and I was kind of defensive of her in the beginning, but especially in this episode, she flips so quickly. Like, we actually get the reveal of what O showed her in the last episode, and then,
it's
like...
It's Mass Effect, Daniel! We were right! We were right!
And then, okay, so let's just I want to talk about this. We'll grant for a moment... that she saw this terrible vision and it convinced her to kill her lover. That's how strongly it makes her feel. But as soon... And she wants to burn down the synth homeworld. But as soon as she meets the synth, she's like, oh, no, you're cool now. I like you. Now I want to be friends with you and I don't want to kill you anymore. I'm like, what is happening to this woman's motivation? I don't know what her motivation is. And I don't... It doesn't make any
sense. Well, and I'm not saying it's true. But the idea to me was introduced in this episode. And I'm not saying it's true. I don't know if it Picard says it or someone says, seems to say, like, did they introduce the idea for you to, like, did they make you kill him? You know, and, like, as part of the vision was, kill Maddox, you know,
she's
directive.
Kind of programmed.
Like, it wasn't necessarily, because, I mean, I would say up to now, everything shows that it was a free will thing. I mean, because it wasn't like she, like, killed him and was like, oh my God, what did I do? You know, sort of like, if we're going to use Battlestar, Athena? Anyway, the first, you know, when she, like, tried to kill Adama, and then was like, what happened? You know, Agnes seemed to know what she was doing. So, but, like, you know, I think, like, if you're her attorney at Deep Space 12, and like, well, I don't know, maybe her mind got,
well, because
you know.
I think the fact that she talks about having, like, you know, the mind meld poison and a psychic block so she can't talk about it.
I'm kidding.
Those are more... chips towards the line of you didn't really have a choice. Like, she's basically been conditioned.
I think it's an important point.
It is.
And I think because in Star Trek, we're aware in Star Trek that people can make other people do things against their will. Like you mentioned, Philip. But it's very stated very clearly. Picard says, were you forced to do this? And she said, no, I did it. I made the choice. So I think that the writers are so far not trying to absolve her of that responsibility. Now, presumably, they're going to give her some sort of something. We're going to find out that Maddox was just a robot or something, and then it's okay, or whatever. But, like, right now, she is guilty. I mean, she's guilty for murdering him. So I just, we'll see what happens, I guess. But
You know, man, she's going to have fun in New Zealand.
Well, and actually, I could say pretty clearly, though, you would think that Maddox is not the template for the male android because Rios sees him. And Rios...
It's true.
And, that's right, and so right, Rios would have right. double gasped of like, oh my gosh, that's shot in the head.
So he could... Yeah, that's a good. That's a really good point, Darren.
And that also makes sense. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what we'll do.
So, yeah, because so we get the table scene, which I thought was really good.
The cafe, I mean, outside the cafeteria as they're waiting to get picked up from school.
Yeah,
it's what those tables look like. Is the like mess every halls. Mess yeah. hall or whatever of school.
Well, yeah, because I thought it was very funny because how small it is. Like, for you'd have this big dramatic scene and everyone's like sort of like trying to get on the picnic table. And I'm like, really? Okay.
Well, I think they were showing us, good. Though, that Agnes was sitting next to Soji. Like, that showed a lot.
Yeah.
That she let.
There was not any social distancing.
Well, she let her sit there.
Yeah.
I did like. Oh, man. I will say, even though I was frustrated with Agnes's motivations and stuff, the moment that Soji says. Agnes is like, don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you anymore. And Soji goes, oh, I'm not going to give you the option.
You could, like, basically, Hello. You couldn't if you tried.
That's a little badassery. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that. Let's do some more of that instead of having her just cry a lot. That'd be great. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, and I have to say, and we'll talk about Picard and Soji in a second, but Soji, I don't know if they... Because, you know, she changed clothes for this episode. You know, she got tired of wearing the same thing. And I don't know if they changed her hair or something. But to me, I mean, obviously she's a very, you know, she's a young lady. But, like, it almost made her a little younger. Like, it made her look like a college kid. You know, I'm 39, I can say college kid. But it made her look like a college kid. But, like, and in some weird ways, and this is maybe just my mind, it introduced this sort of youth into this whole, like, you know, I don't know how to explain it. Because, you know, you have all these, no one's old. Well, I mean... Patrick. But anyway, but you have these older actors, but she was sort of like this breath of fresh air in this episode. I mean, you know, especially at the, you know, this table scene, and then later when we'll talk about Picard and her. And I just, what it was, it's just like this kind of youthful energy that she brought there, but also that quiet strength, or outright strength, as you point out, Daniel, that she brings to that whole discussion of, you know, of everyone kind of being on the same table, Rios sharing his part, Agnes sharing her part, Soji sharing her part, and then...
My thing with her right now is it's so convenient, the things that she can know and will know at the moment. She's like, oh, here's the fact you're about to spot out. I don't know how I know that. Well, like, either you know, like, she's been activated. Either you know or you don't know. It's totally useless for her to be like, you're right, that fact is right. I know it's right now, I just know it is, but I didn't 3 seconds ago. I didn't know what that was. And it's like... It's getting annoying to me. I really don't like that.
I did like how she like took over the ship, kind of like Data did.
There
you
go.
You know, although I was really kind of sad we didn't get a activate new password 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 3 true target
in the Picard voice
or in Rios's voice.
I did like Rios's response to
that was cool.
Awesome, though.
He's awesome.
Lullaby his ship down. That's so cool. Yeah.
Back up to the backup to the backup.
Yep.
Yeah, and at least from a viewer, I was trying to say how am I saying this from a viewer standpoint. You know, you could have just gone with, you know, she takes over the ship and then you just go and that's full stop. But to have it make a conscious choice of everyone, we're all on board.
Okay, guys, all put your hands in. Here we go. On three.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but I mean, just, and I know maybe it sounds stupid, but for everyone to talk it out, yeah, I know. We actually talk out. I know, it's crazy. But anyway, everyone to kind of talk it out and talk down the ledge and then be like, well, you know, we've tried it your way, our way. Let's try it Soji's way. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm being saccharine, but I did like that sort of, eh, let's all do it. But I, and not to get out of order, Darren, what'd you think of Picard and Soji and our, and again, I say this half jokingly, but, you know, our Data love fest that we have to have every episode.
Yeah,
but, you know, it's fine. He's a great character. I know.
It was a good moment. And I liked, you know, man, when they just let Patrick Stewart off the leash, he just delivers. I mean, you can just see the caliber of this actor as he's just, you know, talking. It's as like he never left the role. It's like he did it, like, you know, as if, you know, season 7 was yesterday. But, it's a great moment, you know, not too long, not too short, but, you know, just him and Soji and talking about Data, and she's basically asking about her dad, you know, and it's just, there's lots of human parallels to this moment that we could all relate to, even if we haven't been in the same situation.
I don't think we should call Data her dad. I think we should call Data her positronic donor. Because that's it. Like, that's the ceiling of his contribution, I think.
Well, yeah, because she truly... Yeah, I don't know, I was trying to figure out how far to go with this. She is sort of an adopted daughter.
Data's so part of her family, and this is someone who knew part of her family. I get what you're saying, and I think we'll get revealed a little more in the next two episodes, but that's true. I'm not saying he's
and,
direct
and in
father.
Season three, we'll learn her mother, and in season four, there's going to be her grandfather. It's going to get complicated, folks.
Lao Tu is going to show up and be like, go through her emo phase.
Oh, her older sister she didn't know about.
Lao, you keep stealing all my clothes. Get your own things.
But yeah, and I liked Soji's questions. I mean, there's something an older person might ask, but I'd still like it. You know, through Data's eyes, how would he see you? And I agree, Darren. I think they could have gone very sweet with how Picard reacts to this, emotional conversation, which is good, which is appropriate, which is fine. But, we have to remember, that's not Picard. And so I like how he keeps holding back a little or backtracking or, he's like, oh, so you loved him. And he's like, yes, in my own way, because he's not going to get too sentimental.
Right.
He will a little bit because, as he was with Date, especially like in that deleted scene Nemesis, he can get a little emotional. But
I mean, he basically says, if he had lived and I had died, what about that, Captain? But... Yeah, no, and I totally get that. And that stayed true to the character. Like, he's not going to just be like, let's just start, gushing about Data.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that scene, Daniel? Did you have a tear in your eye?
Not really. Well, the ending made me eye roll, honestly. The moment when she says...
He loved you.
However she ends. He loved you. Like, I don't know if... Because the series seems to take the concept that she's somehow partly Data seriously, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's trying to say that she knows that Data loved him, because I feel like that's what they're pushing. But otherwise, they're just suggesting that she says that she thinks Data would love him because she loves him.
I get the feeling that it's more like the latter, Daniel, where she feels that Data would love Picard because she's learning... She's like, sure, her interaction with Picard, she knows the kind of man he is and, the people around him. She's seen the Riker Troys and things like that.
Troy Rikers.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't know. But she's known Picard for a day and a half at this point.
She's 3 years old.
It doesn't...
Percentage-wise, that's a huge amount of her lifespan.
I mean, this is like a Kess we're talking about here.
It's why it falls flat for me. It doesn't... I liked the conversation. I really did. Up until that last thing. That last line, and I'm like, what are you trying to say? She doesn't know Picard well enough to love him. She certainly doesn't know Data's motivations well enough to say that Data would have loved... If she said, I bet he would have loved you, I think that would have been fine. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. I'm sure he loved you. That's not what she says. He loved you, she said. And I don't know how you know that. You don't know that, lady. What are you trying to suggest? I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm getting hung up on these little things. It really bothered me that was the last line.
Sure. So any other thoughts on board that ship before we move on to other things?
Just one little part where they're about to fly off into the transwarp conduit.
Little trick I've... picked up aboard the artifact.
But, I like how, how Rios is like, you're just going to fly into a transport conduit, gravimetric shear be damned. And she's like, oh, yeah, good. Like, she doesn't really have a plan. But then the fact that she asks Rios, he's like, take me home. And he's like, okay, I can do that.
Hey, if we're leaving the ship, can we talk about the last scene with Picard and Rios? Because that was a great scene.
Yeah, go ahead.
I loved that scene where, by the way, we find out that Picard was an ensign on...
Yeah, what? Is that the...
Wait a minute.
I mean, the Reliant...
I was
going to
say,
a,
that's
got to
be the Reliant A. It cannot be the Reliant Kirk's time.
Yeah.
It's a very strange ship to pick, though, because
It was available.
I mean, obviously it was destroyed well before then, but maybe, it has to
not
be.
Not well before. I mean, like, 20 years, maybe?
Yeah. Well.
He's pretty old. I mean, you know, I don't want to.
He was in the Monster Maroons.
Exactly.
When he was in, so we know, yeah. But anyways, that whole scene, I thought that was a great scene, and that's a Picard speech when he's talking about, you know, fear is the enemy and all that sort of stuff. I loved that stuff. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and I didn't catch it. I mean, the name sounded interesting to me, but luckily we have the nerds out there who caught that. The captain that they talked about, that not Rios's captain, but Rios's captain's captain, was Picard's.
Right,
you know, crush from the Tapestry.
Yeah. That was nice. A big name drop. Yeah, I'm reading on Memory Alpha it's not necessarily the same Reliant. It says it shares its name with the USS Reliant from Star Trek II. I guess they're just saying they're not sure it's the same ship yet.
It's not. It can't.
But they also mentioned that, which I didn't know, is a...
Wait. Unless, also on the Genesis planet, like right next to Spock's tube, was the Reliant that came back, just like Spock came back.
Oh, yeah. So that was but it's saying the reference to the Reliant was originally omitted in the original broadcast of The Measure of a Man, but was restored in the special edition on the Season 2 Blu-ray, which I never picked up that connection, but I guess he does mention that, or it's mentioned somehow, which is cool. It's a nice little tie-back. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think one thing I always... Rios, in some ways, fascinates me because, you know, he was introduced as this rogue, like, Han Solo-like S character. But he's Starfleet, and I was, like, wondering, how Starfleet is he? And, you know, my stereotype of Starfleet, maybe not everyone else's. But especially in this one scene with Picard and Rios, you kind of see the more Starfleet part coming out of Rios. I mean, you know, obviously he's a little... broken, you know, understandably. We're all broken, aren't we? But anyway, hence the name of the title episode, I guess. But I did like that, kind of fishing that part out. Yeah. So, yeah, it was... So, all right, well, let's move on to exposition backstory. And I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way, but how we start the episode, you know, Mass Effect-wise. But just basically, we're just talking about the backstory, the whole Romulan secret and the secret of the synth, Mars Attacks. So, Daniel wants Romulan Daniel. Same thing. what did you think of? I mean, just the whole part of the episode about like explaining the
hula hoop of death,
whatever the heck it's stupid call. And, yeah.
And the unknowable secret that you will literally smash your head with a rock.
Yeah.
Because you now know the secret.
You know, they have to put the blindfold around their eye, and then you won't kill yourself. They don't know the trick. You got to close, you know. So clearly. Yeah. So.
I like that table thing, that floating table thing. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I thought I was bothered, but then I kind of thought about it, and I really like the idea of the octogenarian system, where they literally were powerful enough to push the stars together. I thought that was cool. That's fun. Mm. At first, I was like, well, that's kind of stupid. But then I'm like, well, in Star Trek, we've seen giant empires that can do all
Dyson
sorts
spheres,
of crazy,
or Dyson spheres,
spheres yeah. and all sorts of nonsense. So that's fine. Whatever. I gave up on that one. That was fine. I don't know. This is what we suspected. This is not like surprising. Hey, a long time ago, the synths rose up. I guess
you,
I don't.
Yeah, Daniel. It happened once, and it may happen again.
You could.
I don't
say
know
that.
If you're familiar with
you could
this
say
concept.
That.
I mean, so say. I mean, a lot of us. I mean, like,
yeah. So I don't know what happened. I mean, like, this was supposed to be, I think, 300,000 years ago, or something.
Yeah,
like
I can't
that.
Remember the year. A long time ago. Yeah.
Something along the lines of that, and I assume that the Vulcan Romulan split was well before that. I think. I don't know. I would have.
I would have said after, but.
Yeah. Sorry. Well. Yeah. What I meant to say was it happened.
After
that, yeah, you're right. That's what I meant to say. So I don't know. I feel like the timeline is wiggly and weird. But this is just not surprising to us. We already knew this information. Well, I feel like.
Yeah, I thought it was an introduction, but on an introduction with a larger mystery, which is fine. You can do that as long as you do it well. And I think they, in my opinion, they did. You know, so it's like, okay, this is what drives these people. And we can get into the people, but as far as like the actual backstory of what happened thousands of years ago, we don't know that civilization, And maybe they don't even know, you know, when you see the vision of who or what, you know, you just get a story. And
well,
you know.
And this also drew back, like, I didn't make the connection earlier, maybe I wasn't supposed to, that she, her aunt is crazy Romulan X-Borg, XB, Radma, Deadma.
Yeah.
But
and she was the one that
broke the cube.
The cube.
So I don't know if it's because she had the crazy vision in her head, and when the collective assimilated her, that's what broke it. Because remember when she talks to her, and later on she's like, "Oh, they should have assimilated me." Kind of like the same thing would have happened because she had it in her head as well. But yeah, that was a weird thing. And again, like, how long has it been going on, and how long has this, you know, Council of Eight or whatever, you know, done their thing? Because as Rafi, you know, figures out that the Conclave of Eight is these eight suns, and they're purposely engineered and placed there in order to draw people to this planet to get the message. Reminded me a bit of that Voyager episode where they had the memorial, where you kind of lived through the war again. To kind of remind people about what had happened. I think it's called Memorial. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop on this. Like, I think we need to know more about the synths and things like that. But,
I mean, and there is...
Oh, and doesn't it show that Commander O is half Vulcan, half Romulan?
Yes.
Well, they literally said that. And I was like,
Answers, guys.
That was our theory. Yeah. Yep.
Which makes a lot of sense.
I think I win. Yeah. Yeah, and
oh, I mean, oh, I think actually,
and that they planted
quick,
her and let her rise to the ranks. And
yes. So on that point, one of my big things, and this doesn't actually solve this problem, honestly, but these Jat Vash are so dead set against any. Okay. Nguyen Sung existed for, like, he lived for 200 years, and they could have assassinated him 7,000 times over. And let alone the point when Data enters Starfleet and is, like, a known quantity.
Maybe she blocked, tried to block his entry into Starfleet or something.
Nobody ever came for Data. No secret Romulan organization ever. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
So they.
No,
they
no
say,
I'm saying or came for lore.
Or before, whatever. And so they say, and I think this is to try to undercut that point, they say that, once Data was found, was put into Starfleet, and then she rose through the ranks and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, but still, you guys are like, this is your whole life mission. You don't wait 15 years for someone to get promoted. You could just go kill the android guy.
Well, so I think individual synthetic life isn't as a big a threat as the coming singularity or whatever it is that they're afraid of. Like, they have, and obviously, like, massive amounts of synths being made for Starfleet is going in the wrong direction.
Right, but if they killed Soong, that would have at least delayed this for another 100, 200, 300, 400 years or whatever.
Well, that's a good point. And I don't know. Maybe they've stated this in earlier episodes. I just don't remember. How old is the Zat?
Zat Vash.
Older than time, or whatever. I don't know.
Did they really say that? It's like old. I mean, because we see this. You know, the flashback is what 15 years ago.
So this flashback was in 2385.
So like 15 years
15.
Ago.
Like yeah, it's like 14 years ago.
So I'm like, how long have, you know, are they like 20 years old? I mean, but anyway, because yeah, they'll. I mean, look, but I think that's propaganda. We're old as whatever. You're like 50 years old in real life or something. But it doesn't matter. But, you know, how they phrase it, like, there has to be the threshold crossed or whatever, which I guess is the biological synth or whatever we want to call.
Anti-XB.
You know, Soji models. I don't know. It prompt more questions than answers, but fine. I mean, it's all kind of whatever. Plot to do the larger plot, so I mean, I'm not gonna die in the stone about that. I mean, I thought it was interesting, of course, that, you know, we explain Commodore Org, you explain Narissa, you explain her aunt, all that stuff, because as much as that was interesting, it was. But of course, what this also explains for the backstory is Mars attacks. So, Darren,
it's true.
What'd you think about Mars Attacks?
Yeah, that they, I mean, flat out say that they instigated it, which, I mean, we kind of saw coming. I mean, otherwise Ralphie would be wrong, and we can't have that, apparently. But I think, doesn't Agnes reveal that, though? I can't remember. Does she reveal that to them, that it happens, that they're responsible for Mars? I can't remember if I'm getting that mixed up with other parts of the episode, but... No, she does. She does. Because Ralphie gets vindicated, mm-hmm. and she's starting to wig out because she's so excited.
Yeah, and she's like, I'm right. I told you all, bitches. But anyway, I'm trying to connect the dots of, like, in other words, what's the goal here? I mean, from the Zatbosh. So it's that, you know, the destroyer has been introduced, right? So once, you know, the Maddox sensor in the picture, for some reason they know about him. I don't know why, but they do. Or how. But anyway, so, like, they're going to, I guess they want a synth ban? I mean, is it sort of like, I don't know, the horse is already out of the barn at this point, but okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the, because the synth attack, it wasn't to destroy the synth, per se, because they're kind of were, like, lower level synths.
So, I've been thinking about a lot about this, and I kind of have something that we can compare it with, and mm-hmm. I think it's with the genetic modification.
Okay.
Okay.
And it seems, in that instance, that technology has mostly dropped out of the universe of Star Trek. Now, mm-hmm. of course, we get little stories here and there, but for the most part, it doesn't exist as a big, like, industrious right. thing. It's not widespread or anything like that. So I think their goal was essentially that same scenario. And they say, if we can get them to ban synths, then that's going to be enough, I think. Without the Federation's resources, of course, you would say realistically,
they're really just delaying it. The Klingons, but delaying it like by several decades or centuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because and I mean, and I'm not saying they have to do this, but you know, my nerd mind is going here. It's very Federation specific. Like, so there's no Klingon sense. There's no Romulans. Well, I guess
they're
not any.
But they're not really the kind of species that are like, let's push this boundary. Like, I don't. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, because it just seems like, well, let's go to Mars, and it's like just because there's a large population of synths, I guess. But anyway, I mean, I get it, but it's just interesting.
You know what I was thinking about too, and this is not specifically about this episode. Mm-hmm. Picard was on Romulus for a time; he right. should have known about who the Zatbosh were. Spock was on Romulus for a good amount of time;
right.
he should have known who the Zatbosh were. Anyways, it's not important, but I was just thinking about it.
I mean, Data was on Romulus. So.
That's true. He snuck around.
That is a very good point.
I mean, at the end of the day,
those pointed ears will fool the people every time.
It comes down to the fact that this is a show written in 2020 versus a show that was written in the 90s. Like, but yeah.
Well, I mean, that doesn't necessarily always mean something.
They could have just hired us as consultants.
No, it just means it's something that wasn't thought up of back in the 90s. It's new, but
yeah. Like a Spock sister. All right. So
one
going
last plot.
To, anything else? Yeah. So let's go to the artifact, unless y'all have anything else. So we have the death of Hugh. We have Elrond, you know, playing Lone Gunman. And then we have him pressing the secret button at the end of the last episode. And then just when it seems like all the XBs are getting shot and there's a plan to destroy them all and Elrond's facing death, who should arrive? And, you know, guys, I'm going to admit something about a very stupid thought I had. Because I remember asking last episode, oh, you know, Hugh dies and says you need an X-Borg. I'm like, well, which one is he going to get? And I felt stupid. Because now I think about it, it's like, it reminds me of that point in Voyager and the episode of, like, when the 1Q shows up and he's like, humans, who would know something about humans? And then Q appears and it's like, who's X-Borg. Who do I know that's an explorer?
True. So you get seven. Seven comes in, save the day.
So I felt stupid. Yeah. So,
I liked your little line about, like, you know, once I connect, I might not want to give it up, and they may, you know, like, that was pretty honest. Like,
what do you think of the rise of the new Borg Queen?
It was kind of lackluster in the fact that as soon as it happened, they blew all the Borg out the airlock, so it literally meant nothing.
I'm so upset about this. Can we talk about this?
Very anticlimactic.
Where do we want to go? Because we could talk about this logistically, how it's stupid narratively. Like, listen, here's the thing.
They want to have this cool Borg set, Daniel, but they don't want to actually have to deal with it.
Last week, I specifically said I'm really looking forward to how the Borg play a part in this show. And no, it has been entirely set dressing. That's all it's been. The Borg are not. They may show up. They may show up here in this next episode or the episode after, and whatever happens, that's fine. But it's so upsetting. First of all, the Borg can survive in space.
We
know this. The Borg can survive in space. You're not killing anybody. Second of all, there's no eject all the Borg button. That's so stupid. That cube is so massive, there would still be thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Borgs in that cube. Oh, God, it bothered me so much. I thought this was such a waste.
They're not in their alcoves very well if they just a little, you know.
They just fly. The idea of Seven as, like, maybe getting tempted by this sort of, like, it's a desperate situation, and the Borg cube is closed off so she can control just that Borg cube, but maybe she gets a taste of power or whatever. Like, it's like, that's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. And then get the black eyes, the Borg Queen tubes, and like, they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. It's so cool.
That's cool. And then it immediately goes away and means nothing. And you're like, what just happened?
Yeah, I liked her green glowy eyes. Like, that was pretty intense.
That was so frustrating.
The Borg cube regenerating.
Yeah, that was cool.
It's regenerating!
Yeah, that could be the first shot of the next episode where she just, like, scoops up the Borg again and then they just take off.
I mean, I was honestly waiting for
But again, she's not
some,
the queen anymore. She's not attached. It's like they turned that back off.
I mean, I was waiting, though, for it to be like that. Like, oh, Narissa, whatever her name is. Narissa, because I think it's, like, Narcissus. But anyway, Narissa's right. You know, her plan's winning. All the Borg throw up, and it's like, I thought the new Borg queen would be like, zing, zing, you know, transport all the Borg back inside. The Borg cube activates, and they're like, oh, no. And then the Borg just start, you know, assimilating the Romulans left and right. And then, you know, and then Narissa can still magically escape, because that's what she does, I guess. But, I mean, yeah, I was waiting for some badassery. And then, like, you know, maybe, like, it gets to a point where this up-tempo of, like, oh, it's the Borg are back. And then that's when Seven pulls out. And then...
Or what you do is you set this whole thing up. Like Narissa, you think Narissa gets the one up here, and then Seven initiates the sphere ejection, and then she takes all the Borgs with her, and they just leave. And then whatever, you play with that later. That'd
didn't,
be cool.
Didn't they
the
eject
Borg
a
cube explodes,
or did we just saw it?
No, not that I.
We saw the sphere docked or something.
No, I don't think
so. I think of something else then.
No. But that would be cool. Do something like that. I don't know. It's just, what's the point? What is the point? Nothing happened. And then that's it. It's just over.
Because then it's like her collective was about like eight guys or girls, you know, gender neutral. Eight XBs. Well, they just showed up and were like,
for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Done.
And then they all attack her. But yet, of course, she gets away. It's like, well, then why even bother attacking her?
Magical escape.
Yeah.
Yep.
Magical escape.
So. Yeah. So yeah, I was really looking forward to some Borg badassery, but yeah. So Seven's done. I'm trying to remember how it ended. So she gets out.
Think he helps her, but they don't go anywhere. They're still on the cube.
Yeah.
But then all the Romulans are leaving.
Yeah,
all the Romulans
happened.
Are leaving to go to the homeworld.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
It feels like the most pointless dead end thing. Nothing happens. Everybody's exactly where they left off, except now Seven's on the cube. They really impact her character. They do something interesting and cool, and like you think, oh, what's Seven gonna do? Maybe she's tempted, and she even says, maybe I don't want to give it up.
Well,
that's cool.
And they didn't
that's
even have to show her being disconnected in this episode. Like, leave that hanging like, okay, well, the Borg got flushed, but Seven is still connected to. Seven has a Borg cube at her disposal.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a little old school or classic Doctor Who cliffhangery, but like that could be the last line in that story of like, you know, you show the close up of Seven, and then you go to Elrond going, "Are you going to assimilate me?" And you just do a close up of like Seven turning her head with those black eyes looking at him, and you just end it there. But we didn't even get. I mean, and maybe this is just a nitpick. Like, I would have loved to hear Seven's voice as the Borg collective, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, she does say we are Resistance is futile.
Yeah, but I want to hear like the Borg voice as Seven, kind of.
Yeah, that'd
you
be
know.
Cool. Yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff there. Why would you? Why would you bring her on to do that cool thing? And then there's all of a sudden just, nah. It's more important that this Romulan lady that nobody likes gets away and we think she's tough. No, nobody cares about her.
I mean, I know Elrond's a little naive and he hasn't gotten out. So he hasn't seen Galaxy Quest. So he doesn't know the line of like, your little dots. So the green dot is coming at us really fast and they're disappearing. And,
his line was pretty cute, though, yeah. At the end when he was like, whatever he said, do you want to simulate me?
Yeah.
That was cute.
All right. So that's more or less it. So we're all going to the... Well, okay. Well, one little thing just to address, which I really wish I didn't have to, but Admiral Pottymouth shows up.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Just to establish the plot point, because otherwise I would probably just forget it, but to establish the plot point that there is a Federation squadron.
Sure there is. Sure. We saw them. Yeah. Didn't we see them, guys? No, we didn't.
At Deep Space 12. And so, you know, theoretically we have, you know, the El Serena going to the home world. We have the Romulans going to the home world. And the cavalry probably will show up of the Federation.
Oh, will they? Because they don't know where
Starfleet
to go.
Ships.
They're waiting for them to
they'll
show up.
So. Yeah, well, you know. I'm sure there'll be someone who sent a transmission or something.
Riker, when Riker hugged Picard.
Oh, did he slap something on the back of him?
Could, well, okay.
I'm just saying. I guarantee you, it's going to be Riker.
Who do we think was
ship.
In that shuttle that followed him into the Borg transit conduit at the very last second?
Oh, that's, what's
his
face?
Okay. Narek.
Narek.
I had a feeling.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it is left. So I think substantively, maybe it wasn't all there. But I mean, emotionally, there was a lot of things I nitpicked. But I think, you know, the storyline of the El Serena stuff, La Serena stuff, sorry, was really good. And the other stuff was not bad. It was just also there and just worked. So it was probably a lot of episode for this episode. But,
well, and now I'm wondering, with the destruction of Romulus and pretty much the Empire, why don't we start developing cloaks ourselves again?
Because it was a faith and good treaty, Darren.
To be fair, they're not even using their cloaks. For whatever reason, they're not using cloaking technology. So,
yeah. I would love the Queen 7 to be like, wait a minute, there's been a new modification, and you suddenly see the...
Oh my gosh.
So. But anyway, so any final thoughts about
then
broken pieces?
She just takes off moving, and you see her just plow through ships because they don't see her coming, and they just spreads them, like smashes through them like the cleaver ship.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, guys, so two episodes left. Daniel, are they going to land this in two episodes?
I think they tried to get like
a lot of answers out of the way.
Out. They tried and did. For a good chunk, but in a lot of these circumstances, they're just pushing the goalpost further down the field. I don't know. We don't really know a lot of the stuff I think we need to know. In two episodes, I think they're going to be pretty dense, and I'm a little less concerned about a Discovery Season 2 situation, but I don't think it's... I think it's going to be really, really hard to deal with all of this stuff at once to a satisfying degree. So who knows? I guess we'll see what happens, and I expect a surprise or two, I imagine. But, I guess I'm ready for it. Yeah, two episodes left.
And, Darren, what about you? Do you think two episodes, it's all going to – all your questions – I mean, obviously they're not going to answer every question because they need to set up something. But most questions answered?
Yeah, I think so. I think I liked how – we still have some questions, but they answered a lot in this episode. I'm more sad the fact that I'm assuming we're going to get these two episodes over the next 2 weeks – even though it's kind of billed as like a two-parter finale. So that last week wait is going to be terrible, I'm sure, because they're going to leave it on some sort of cliffhanger. But I can't wait for the Enterprise G to show up at the very, very end. I mean, that's going to be great.
I know. We were joking about it, but guys, you know it's going to happen. now, I don't know if you remember, guys. Darren, I think I asked you specifically there a week or two or three ago, will the Lost Arena survive? In the teaser... Looks like it's going to have some problems.
It does look like it's going to crash.
Oh, that's true. Into the planet. Well, I'm sure a planet of artificial life could rebuild a ship pretty well.
The soil has mechanical regenerative properties. All right, guys. Well, Daniel, if folks want to talk to you about what blocks you've forced on your replicator, where can they find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at @oneupdan. That's the number one, not the word.
And Darren, if people want to talk about any magic holographic tables you have for your family to gather around every day, where can folks reach you?
They can find me on Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi, on Twitter, Twitch, and Instagram. And I just noticed that if you know, we're in episode 8, right? You know where we were in season 1 of TNG by episode 8? Justice.
And that's what this episode gave us. And if folks want to join my collective, they can find me on Twitter at @NCPublicServant. Well, 2 more episodes to go, and then really probably be time for a new series after that. We'll see. But until then, I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
Stranded here under quarantine on City Alpha 3.